We invite you to visit Maserati Jacksonville today for a personalized luxury driving experience like no other. Plus, for a limited time, take advantage of our historically low interest rates. Visit online at MaseratiJacksonville.com.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's good to have you back with us. We bring in the final days of November in 2021. We got tonight, we got tomorrow, then we'll bring in December 1st on Wednesday, which is going to be a huge day around here with the J-Fund. We'll give you some more details on that momentarily, but let's get things started by welcoming you back. Hopefully a very happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Always great to get with family, get with friends, try to take a couple of days off. I'd like to say that it's stress-free for you, but who are we kidding? I mean, the combination of the in-laws slash outlaws and football is enough to push you literally to the brink. And that is normally the case here with the great holiday that has come and gone. We're going to relive it all tonight, as we do each and every Monday. We go into the night right here alongside RJ Saunders. My name is Rick Ballew. Tonight, 6 to 8. Tomorrow night after Helmets and Heels. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 6 to 8. We'll be out of Mr. Chubby's Thursday in Pontevedra. Again, from 6 until 8. Already looking forward to that show, but I'm one of those guys that's not going to give up tonight, tomorrow, or Wednesday. I'm just not going to do it. I can wait, and it's a good thing, because things that normally I am excited about, at least in the world of sports, end up being a major disappointment. So I'm in real no hurry to actually get to a game, and that next one will be in that brand new building in Los Angeles. What the heck is going on with the Rams? Have they won a big game yet? This year, it seems like every time they're on national television, every time they're up against it, they end up losing. They knock off Tampa Bay? Perhaps they did. I'm trying to remember. I mean, listen, it's hard enough figuring out trying to cover this team on a day-to-day basis. I mean, what the Rams do, yeah, they knocked off Tampa in week three, 34-34. 34-24, but, you know, some nationally televised games late, what, Sunday night, Monday night, what have you. They lost against Arizona. They've now lost three in a row to Tennessee, at San Francisco, at Green Bay. Maybe they were overlooking those opponents to get ready for the Jaguars as they'll head out to L.A., try to win a football game Sunday. The Jags have struggled on the road. Jags have also struggled at home. Jags have struggled in London. Jags have struggled in the afternoon. Jags have struggled in the evening. Jags have struggled everywhere. And that continued yesterday. A 21-14 loss. They just never really got things going. And, you know, it's such an alarming number. And I've never seen anything like it except with this franchise over the last several years about the slow starts. They are so common in the world of college football. I mean, how many times over the years, decades even, have you talked about, and just pick your school, and you ask yourself the question time and again, why does it take so long to get things going? And if you could somehow just avoid the first 15 minutes of the game, things get, you know, move it along a little bit, perhaps in the second quarter or at least the second half. But that has been something that I have witnessed for a very long time in college football. That's normally not the case in the NFL. But it has been around here now for the last 3 years, three plus years, as a matter of fact. And that was the case again yesterday. I mean, you're down 17-0 against Indy. You're down 17-0 against San Francisco. And before you know it, yesterday, you know, it's 21-3 Atlanta, a team that was absolutely reeling, a team that was up against it, a team that could not run the football, 78 yards per game. I mean, that's what I talked about all week. That's what I talked about during the pregame yesterday on the Jaguars radio network. Hey, this game really sets up well for Jacksonville in the ditch. You know, put the pressure on Matt Ryan. Calvin Ridley's not around. Who's going to throw the football to? You look at the overall pass numbers, they ended up being really okay. I mean, what? Pitts only had a couple of receptions. They ran the football right at the Jags. And now three consecutive games, this once, I want to say, impressive defensive front that was doing a really good job against the run, all of a sudden has gotten ripped apart in three consecutive games. So I don't know how you're going to be able to fix that, but it just didn't appear to be a real good game for Malcolm Brown. There didn't appear to be a real good game for Devon Hamilton. And then on the flip side, you weren't getting any pressure. I mean, DeJuan Smoot always is going to remain one of the more underrated players on this football team. Josh Allen, and I'll give you this, Josh came out with a shoulder. They worked on it. I could sense some serious pain. And to give him credit, he got back out there and he gave it a go. But you had combined yesterday one quarterback pressure out of Allen and Smoot. There were no sacks. The only sack in the game came from Roy Robertson-Harris, and that was absolutely positively a coverage sack, where the secondary did it. So, hey, one positive, I think you got to look at Tyson Campbell. I know that in the world that we live in, and I'm a part of it, all right, we are all about the knee jerk. You know, you give up a touchdown here, oh, you got to fire that guy. You can't score an offensive play here, you got to fire that guy. That is just the world that we're in today. Everyone wants to fire. Everyone wants to say it was a mistake, it was a disaster. I got all your stuff earlier this year on Tyson Campbell, and his issues were incredibly alarming. He seemed to have zero ball skills. Well, he made a nice play yesterday while in cover two. Zone coverage, went back, filled his gap in where he was supposed to be, and ended up coming down with the football. He also knocked down a couple of passes. He was very good against the run. He did allow one touchdown. That was in man coverage, and I thought Atlanta right there diagrammed a very good offensive play, and I thought it was right on the cusp of being an illegal pick, but it was a brilliant move, and I just sat there saying to myself, imagine that. They drew up a rub route. They drew up a pick, and it worked to precision, and you know, I just continue to look at the other side of the football and wonder what is going on offensively with the Jaguars and why there's not just somewhat more of an imagination on that side of the football. Once again, yesterday, not a good day. And, you know, I hate this. Here it is, what, week 13? We will, we'll complete week 12 tonight. And then week 13, I guess, officially gets underway on Wednesday with an off day on Tuesday. But the offense, again, I mean, I just find myself with so many more answers than questions. And I just kind of want to move through it and think, all right, things are set there. You need to work on things here. And things are set there, and you need to get some new players here. Man, I get lost. I really do. I mean, Dan Arnold out now at least 4 weeks. You're probably going to end up putting him on the shelf for the end of the year. The kid tried to pick, you know, it was all effort. He tried to pick up an extra couple of yards, and it cost him his knee. It's a grade 2 sprain with 6 remaining. I'd be surprised if he returns. I mean, Jamal Agnew, same thing happened a week ago. That time, you know, with his hip. And, you know, you can go to the drops the week prior to that. And on that first series drop and on that second series drop against San Francisco, they both went to players by the name of Dan Arnold and Jamal Agnew, guys who weren't even thought of to be a part of this offense. during the off season and certainly during training camp in August, then all of a sudden on third down, those are your top two guys that you're throwing the football to. So, you know, the weaponry here is really an issue. But I think it's so much more than that. Where's the balance? What happened with James Robinson yesterday? I know he coughed up a ball. 16 plays out? You're going to put James Robinson in the doghouse? I mean, I see it every week in college and pro football where players make egregious mistakes, especially taunting or 15-yard personal fouls. And, you know, a coach may take him out for a play, but then he knows his job's on the line. He immediately puts him right back out there. You bring in Dari Ogunbowale and he gets a rep in the red zone and drops one. And Carlos Hyde drops one. And Carlos Hyde, I think when it was all said and done, had 32 snaps yesterday compared to only 38 for James Robinson. And there's no secret about this. Robinson is a warrior. He's not himself. He does not have his normal burst. Now, he's not a speed guy to begin with. But it was evident yesterday. He cannot push off that heel, and he's still got some issues with the knee. He's not as fast as he once was. He's a tough guy, and he's your best offensive player. Is that really going to send a message? And, you know, Urban Meyer not even, either A, not knowing about it, or B, knowing about it, and then saying, well, that's Daryl Bevel, that's Bernie Parmalee, you got to ask them. I don't micromanage. Isn't that one of the first things you think of when Urban Meyer, when that name is thrown out? Everyone thinks of things differently. You hear a song on the radio, you think about the one who got away. You ever do that? Not you. You're too young. You haven't experienced that yet. I mean, you could be just rolling on down the road and, you know, all of a sudden you're listening to AC/DC. And then, you know, let's say just for conversation, a track by Supertramp comes on. I'm not in the mood, so I'll flip over to a light rock station. You got James Taylor and he starts talking about Up on a Roof. I want to think about the girl that got away.
Right. And you know, while you're driving down, watching the sunset, like your mind goes back and reminisces.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing here with trying to evaluate, you know, what is going on with this football team. When I think of Urban Meyer, one of the first things that comes to mind for me is an absolute total micromanager, a guy who oversees everything within the organization. And he doesn't know. You got to ask Bernie Parmalee. Ask Daryl. All right. I mean, he answered the question. Certainly the answer was not one that I think anyone out there did expect. So here we go again. Let's do it. Maybe we can all learn from it. What was it, the great Bob Dylan who once said, but I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. That's kind of the way that I feel. You know, like I've lived it. I've learned to recover from it. And now I'm just trying to find a solution somehow, somewhere, some way. We'll try that tonight over the next couple of hours. Anyway, it's great to have you with us. My name is Rick Ballew. This is RJ Saunders. Our opening comments is each and every night are brought to you by Lou Bode of Capital Financial Strategies. His number is 626-7995. Been with Lou now for more than 2 years. Free call, free consultation. Hey, the market's crazy. Okay, the market is helter-skelter. And you just don't know what to expect. But when you sit down with Lou, you could say, let's gamble here a little bit. Let's get aggressive. You know, maybe you're 220 yards away. You got a little creek there at about 180. Should I lay up, guys? Should I lay up? No, you take a big, huge haul out of that Pabst Blue Ribbon. And you go for the other side. You go for the green. So I do that with some of my money. Then I look at the other side and say, well, I want some retirement. I want some comfort. You know, I want to have a little nest to lay into. If all of a sudden I become part of the cancel culture and I show up here one day and find out that my key no longer works, I want to be able to believe that there's something there for me on the other side. So I can say, hey, Lou Bode, how about something kind of soft here? You know, Got me all set up, all sorts of different types of funds. That's the way things are. You cannot lose, ladies and gentlemen. It's a free call, and it is a free consultation. And trust me, it has worked incredibly for me. It'll do the same for you. Call Lou today about your money with Capital Financial Strategies. His number is 626-7995. Are you ready for LA week?
Oh, I'm ready.
This is all about you.
Me?
Yeah. You're an LA guy.
Yes, sir.
You're going to get me a big LA guest this week? You're going to get me, Denzel Washington?
Ooh.
You're going to get me Eddie Murphy?
LeBron James?
You're going to get me the King?
God.
Give me one of the Kardashians?
No.
You going to do something like that for me?
We'll get some cooking.
All right. There you go. He's RJ Saunders. I'm Rick Ballew. This is the home of the Jaguars.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, even the great ones rest. The Blue Crab Crab House, they take Monday off. They'll be back at it tomorrow. Doors open at 4:30. Dollar margaritas each and every Tuesday. And you want a quick gift with the holidays approaching? How about a $30 gift card? Only 20 bucks. At the Blue Crab Crab House. Open 6 days a week, beginning at 4:30. Again, closed today, back at it tomorrow. And also on Tuesday, $1 margaritas. That is the Blue Crab Crab House right off of San Jose. They're on Gillington Creek Road. Typically my Friday night stop and stuff. Stop and stuff the face.
Stop and stuff? That's new for me. I haven't heard stop and stuff.
Just came up with it right now. You have a happy Thanksgiving?
I did. How about you?
Very good.
Okay.
Yeah. You had it here with your family and Jax?
Had it here with the family and Jax. Let's see. Thursday was good. Friday, I believe the Lakers played and we lost. Very bad.
The NBA is a Christmas Day thing. It's not a
Thanksgiving. Yeah, once we get into Christmas, maybe we'll get into that. Saturday was really good in the world of college football.
Not for me.
But in terms of our picks, you won the Florida State in terms of our picks.
So. Because I picked Florida, yeah. Who's the big winner around here? Let's get a showing of hands. It was the, what do you know, Blue picked Florida over Florida State. And the game went, I hate to say it, exactly the way I thought it would, with Richardson really being the difference and just bad in-game coaching. By Florida State. I mean, the special teams unit is beyond atrocious. But we'll get there in a little bit. I want to stay with the NFL. All three teams, all road teams, were winners Thursday in the NFL. You know, the last 3 years, the last nine games that have been played on Thanksgiving, the road team has won.
Those were good Thanksgiving games as well. I forgot to mention. Those were good Thanksgiving games.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago, Detroit, man, I don't know. I kind of set back the game a little bit. Certainly the Raiders-Cowboys was entertaining, and the Bills began to get away from the Saints. I like the Egg Bowl as well this past Thursday night. But what about that for a trend? 9-0 road teams in the NFL over the last 3 years on Thanksgiving. Where does that come from? Hey, the road teams again, updated numbers, 7 more wins on the year for road teams as opposed to home teams. We'll see what happens tonight. Seattle's a small favorite, 1.5 points. The total is 47 as they will play tonight in the District of Columbia. To NFL teams wondering, you know how you get back the home field advantage and win a game?
Win?
Yeah, how you do that? Do you know how you do that?
I feel like there's so many reasons, so no, I don't know one specific.
Schedule the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, don't do that.
Okay, they're rolling in this weekend, for crying out loud. Jacksonville hasn't won a road game in nearly 2 years. You got to get to the closing of the black hole. I wonder if that marijuana, that secondhand smoke and that resin or whatever, I wonder if that's finally filtered its way out. Man, it was plentiful on that particular day. But, you know, that is the case for the Jags this weekend. They got to go all the way. I mean, look at the map, ladies and gentlemen. It is such a long trip. You know, you're going from one coast to the other, I guess. When I think of one coast to the other, I think East Coast to West Coast. This is in the deep south, even though we're in the northern parts of Florida. But, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a tough one. Jacksonville is what, 3-14 out on the West Coast. They lost this year at Seattle. Again, they did win a couple of years out in Oakland, as I just said, but 3-14 lifetime. So you have that, and then you've got the House of Horrors with the matchup in Nashville a week from Sunday. Jacksonville hasn't won out there since 2013. I want to say that was Gus Bradley's first year. So you got a couple of tough ones in a row. I didn't think I would be doing this at this particular time in the month of November, but I really got hit up by quite a few Jaguar fans yesterday and today. It really is time to start thinking about the draft, isn't it? It really is time to start prying into free agency and possible trades. I mean, if the season ended today, Jacksonville would select third in the 2022 draft. Even though Houston beat them head-to-head, the determining factor is strength of schedule. Right now, Houston is number two behind Detroit. Jacksonville is three. Of course, those two teams will face one another a little bit later on this year. I believe that is 3 weeks away. But, I mean, are you at that point now? I think yesterday was so important for that reason. For what it's worth, I picked Jacksonville yesterday. I thought they were going to win this game. I thought it was going to be victory number three on the year. And then I looked at games like Houston, and I looked at games like at the New York Jets, and I was thinking, all right, maybe, possibly this team can win five games. And I think Jag fans in a heartbeat right now would take a 5-12 season and obviously understand that there's a lot of room for growth. Well, now you're 2-9. You're a double-digit underdog at L.A., so you're really staring at 2-10. And I do understand that we see major upsets each and every week in the NFL, including the game here a few weeks ago, what I guess it was a month ago now, when the Buffalo Bills came into town. The Rams are beaten up, too. Make no question about it. That is a beaten up team. And they're only 3-2 in their own building. Again, the Jaguars, though, haven't been able to win on the road. They are 0-4 away from Duval and or London. Are you at that point now, though? Is that where you are? Yeah, I was hoping for a season where all of a sudden it would be there and, you know, we'd start to dive, nose deep into it around playoff time in the month of January, and you figure everything out. I mean, I understand the way you are as a fan. I completely get fandom. And it's never fun to root for your team to lose. And this organization, or I should say this fan base, was put in that position a year ago because of Trevor Lawrence. Well, there isn't a Trevor Lawrence this year. Frankly, I don't even know if I was just told that you get the number two pick. Well, who's to say what they're even going to do right now? Are you going to definitely get an end? Are you going to go Thibodeau? I mean, for crying out loud, look at the kid from Michigan over the weekend. Are you definitely going an end? Is a wide receiver worthy of that pick? You know, everything I've read so far says no, but I want to ask you that tonight before I really get into everything with this football team as far as where they are, what is next, and have things changed for you as far as, okay, that's it, this loss to Atlanta was enough for me, and because of that, you know, you might as well just lose them all and get the best possible draft pick. You know, so let me know what you think about that. 641-1010 on our text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get me on Twitter, Baloo1010XL. All right, so let's continue with this. It is our Jaguars recap. It is brought to you by Miller Careers. You can go to Miller Electric Company, powering the possibility. They have jobs open all across Jacksonville. Very good jobs. And whenever you drive, no matter where you are, whether it's churches, whether it's hospitals, whether it's schools, bridges, downtown, the stadium, everything else that's going on, folks, they have been around forever, and they're not going anywhere. It is a company based right here in Jacksonville, and you name it, they have it open and available for you right now, whether it's low-voltage systems, installers, electrical superintendents, journeymen, electricians. Maybe you're a current electrician right now. You're not making good money. All right. You're going to make that at Miller Electric. And you're also going to get incredible benefits. So check out everything. Go to MikoJax.com or go to Miller Careers and get the very latest there from the good friends at Miller Electric Company. All right. Couple of other thoughts on the Jaguars in their game yesterday. You know, one thing I did see that I liked with this football team is it was their best effort of the year on third down. You know, 9 of 16. They were in some decent situations yesterday as far as down and distance. Now, you got to consider the following. It was the worst defense they faced all year. Okay, Atlanta came in 31st against the run. Atlanta came in giving up more than 28 points a game. This was an organization that had been outscored 68-3 by Dallas and New England in consecutive losses before they faced the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, you know, Jacksonville had an opportunity. They just couldn't capitalize on it. The six penalties really hurt. Man, those special team penalties. I mean, you got to be kidding me. And again, this is beyond frustrating. Because those who have followed the career of Urban Meyer, you know, back to his days here at Florida and certainly at Ohio State as well, you know just how important special teams are to him. And he's addressed that since the moment he got here. You know, you just look at, he went out and got Jamal Agnew for special teams. He went out and he got Rudy Ford for special teams. Lorente McCray is a guy that I did not have making this 53-man roster. The reason being, I don't think he could give you much defensively. I've understood for quite some time that he is a good special teams player, but, you know, jumping offside yesterday on special teams and two huge penalties overall on your special teams, continued drives, and kept your defense out on the field when your offense should have been able to come back out. And, you know, these drives are just too long, and they're killing Jacksonville. I mean, you can go back to last week, what, that 20-play drive that took up more than 13 minutes. Jacksonville was really starting up against it. You know, consecutive weeks, as I said at the top, down 17-0. Then yesterday, you're down 21-3. They're not talented enough to come from behind and do that type of, you know, catching up. This team isn't built that way. When you don't have any home run hitters, the only way you're going to win is with ball control. You can't have self-inflicted wounds. I feel as if I have been either A, protecting, or B, giving the benefit of the doubt to Juwan Taylor. I no longer can do that. That was a disaster again for him yesterday. And you just cannot commit a penalty when you are in the red zone and you are going in. It can't happen for a veteran offensive lineman. He's already got 11 penalties on the year. Oh, can you move him inside? Okay, I don't know what you can do with him. I don't know what to tell you. Walker Little apparently can't play right tackle. It's mystifying. You know, Tyson Campbell finally has a good game. That's encouraging. All right, so where are you, Andre Sisco? He got two snaps. Where are you, Walker Little? He can't get on the field. You know, this rookies deserve time. But you're 11 games in, or 11 weeks in. I guess you're 12 weeks in, 11 games in. You got to figure things out. You know, you're at least at the point now in the season where, and I understand the way coaches think, and in a lot of ways it drives me crazy. And again, I'm coaching from the couch, just like you're coaching from the couch. But there's certain things that coaches have and coaches do that only they get, that only they understand. And we, you know, one of those is in the NFL, why does the starting quarterback always stay in? Unlike, you know, in college where you're going to replace that quarterback, you're going to bring someone else in, and whether it's mop time or what have you. I did see it the other night with Tampa. They went with Blaine Gabbert, but did I just say Blaine Gabbert on these radio airwaves at 6:30 a.m.?
You did.
You need to start shocking me. Seriously.
That's inhumane.
But it'd be kind of cool. Just kind of like, you know, give me a little bit of a spark sensation that would kind of tingle my spine and make my hair stand up.
But I feel like you would tinkle on yourself.
Certain things, like if I ever use the word narrative on this show.
Yeah, we don't use that.
Pavlov it, all right? I should do the same thing by mentioning Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah.
Right?
But I don't think we should do shock treatment.
Kind of like, you know, listen, Mike Norvell, no hoodies, no earrings, no hats. You know, teaching him up and down. You will not wear an earring in the Moore Athletic Center. You will not wear a hoodie in the Moore Athletic Center.
You don't really understand what it's all about.
How about working on returning a freaking punt? How about working on the basic onside kick? Now, what we have around here is, you have a hoodie? Oh, my God, that means you must come from a bad family. You must have a bad upbringing. Hey, Mike, I don't think that's the reason, brother. I don't think you're going to get the 5 and 4 four-star recruits if you're working that.
So you don't really understand what it's all about.
Break time. Get me out of here. 3, 2, 1.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
They're coming to take me away. They're coming to take me away. I have a feeling I'm going to enjoy the trip. What the hell does this say? Now Aaron Rodgers is not going to have toe surgery. Can anyone get anything straight with Aaron Rodgers? I mean, I rolled out of the rock. It was early today, RJ. It was about 10 of 11. I had to go, you know, to the restroom. And I was like, just go with it, Blue. Grind. And I went straight for a cup of coffee, black coffee, at around 5 minutes to 11. I've taken on this whole day.
So what time did you go to sleep last night?
Probably around 3.
So you got, 7, 8 hours?
Yeah, I wanted to go back and watch some of Tom Brady in Buffalo. I wanted to see a little bit of Tennessee and New England. I as well went on to watch a movie that didn't necessarily have a happy ending, which was kind of cool. I know in the world of rom-coms, and guy has girl, guy loses girl, guy goes through transition, end of movie, guy gets girl, roll credits. I like something every once in a while to go sideways. And I found one of those last night. But I woke up this morning being told that Aaron Rodgers is going to have surgery on his toe. It was a COVID toe. Then it wasn't a COVID toe. Just like Aaron Rodgers got the vaccine. No, he didn't get the vaccine. Just like Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to play for the Green Bay Packers. Of course he's going to play for the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers can't make up his freaking mind. Everything that comes out of his mouth, you have to sit back and say, did he say it or did someone else say it? And if he did say it, is he going to change it in the next couple of minutes? You know what he'd end up being? A phenomenal politician.
Oh, absolutely. Well, maybe his old lady made a concoction as a cure for the COVID toe, maybe. That's why he's saying he's not getting surgery,
because
she made some sort of concoction to heal it or go surgery.
I'll vote for you, Aaron. Why don't we begin by lowering gas prices? 79.07. Baloo, how do you make sense of the Jags not looking like they know what they're supposed to play in a football game until deep in the third quarter, week after week? You know, I actually began with this about 48 minutes ago. It is completely, totally, absolutely mystifying to me. This is commonplace in college football. I don't care who you are, what your team is, you know that there have been times that your program on Saturday, for one reason or another, they are in a coma in the first quarter. It doesn't matter who the competition is. It takes them a while to get things started. This is not commonplace in pro football. It has been. What was it up until a year ago? I can't remember now. I have to look back through my notes. But didn't Jacksonville go like 23 or 24 straight games without scoring a touchdown on their opening drive?
Yeah.
So this has been going on around here for quite some time. And, you know, it hasn't changed. Folks, grab the steering wheel with both hands, okay? You realize the Jaguars right now are scoring 15.7 points a game? 15.7. Their season high is 23. I'm just going to check back again because I keep data. Just for this very reason, I keep it. Last year, the Jaguars offense, you remember how poor it was? They averaged 19.1 points a game. Right now, they're 15.7. They're 31st in the NFL. They cannot score. They are averaging a touchdown, and a two-point conversion. You can't win. And the defense is overachieved. Now, the defense has gotten gashed lately, particularly against the run, and that's very disappointing to me. Jonathan Taylor, Deebo Samuel, Cordell Patterson. Just no secrets here. Just lining up and running the football right down Jacksonville's throat. And you know, for the first eight games, outside of Derrick Henry getting a little bit crazy against Jacksonville in the fourth quarter, Jags did a really nice job defending the run. All of a sudden, it's pretty simple. That's the game plan. Let's, line up, run the football. Let me find this. Yesterday, Atlanta gets the ball. 9 plays, 32 yards, they punt. Okay? Jacksonville actually puts together an 8-play, 28-yard drive and punt. Atlanta takes it from their own 19. 9 plays, 81 yards, touchdown. 9-play drive. 4:57 off the clock. 5:17 off the clock. You know how many drives Jacksonville got yesterday in the first quarter?
How many?
One.
No.
You get one. I mean, last week, San Francisco went 20 plays, took 13 minutes and 5 seconds off the clock. Jacksonville went 3 and out. They went 3 and out. They got one drive in the first quarter last week. Here it is a week later. You get one drive, you actually get a couple of first downs. So you're moving the football a little bit, an 8-play drive. Again, you didn't pick up many yards, picked up 28 yards. But that that's it. Atlanta goes 18 plays, 113 yards, and they get up 7-0. So you begin the second quarter, and Jacksonville has had the football once. And they're abandoning the run too quickly, in my opinion. And James Robinson yesterday deserved a Purple Heart. He didn't deserve to be benched. He's not 100%. He's playing hurt. He's got a bad heel. He's got a bad knee. I wish I had an answer for you. I do not. I have almost never said, I don't know, unless it's about something clearly that I don't know. Well, I don't know. I can't tell you why this football team, week after week after week after week, can't get things going early in the game. I watch them in pregame. Hell, when I'm on the road, I'm in there hours and hours and hours before the game. They're there in plenty of time. They're awake. They're stretched out. There's momentum. There's juice. There's adrenaline. There's focus. I mean, I see it all. This isn't a bunch of guys that are going through the motions and waiting on a paycheck. I can tell that the effort is there. I can tell that the will to go out there and try to win a ball game is there, but it's just not happening. So who do you blame? I mean, you got to blame someone, right? I mean, whose fault is it? I don't know what the numbers are. I'd have to do some research on it. But I want to believe right now that the Jaguars are absolutely, if not the worst, one of the two or three worst teams in the NFL when it comes to scoring in the first quarter. And I'll also say to scoring in the first half. Heck, they're 31st in the league in scoring, period. But it seems like they get the majority of those points in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter, in, you know, some extent, in garbage time. Don't have an answer there for you. But I will say this is the first time I've ever seen it in pro. Seen college a lot. And it's been happening around here with several different offensive coordinators, several different quarterbacks. This has been an I bet if you looked at the last 50 games, all right, you would see, I doubt in the last 50 games that the Jaguars have scored 10 or more points in the first quarter. I'm going to guess maybe once, possibly twice. Last 50 games, if you were to look at it on their first drive, my guess is that they've scored touchdowns a couple of times. So it's not only the 11 games this year. This has been an ongoing pattern for the last, actually, that 50 games would be wrong because that takes you back to the 2017 nice run. But certainly the last 4 years. And, you know, September of 2018 was pretty good. They got off to a 3-1 start. They lost that game to Tennessee 9-6, so obviously they didn't score there. But I got to believe from 18 on, 18, 19, 20, and 21. So that's 3 times 16 and what, 11? All right, so, yeah, you're right there. Around 50 games, this team can't score, especially in the first quarter and in the first half. All right, second hour is coming up. RJ Saunders is here. My name is Rick Ballew. It's great to have you with us. This is the home of the Jags, 1010 on the AM, 92.5 in the FM.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I'm going to mix in some of your calls this hour. Just give you an opportunity to get it, whatever it is, off your chest. I know it's, I feel incredibly better after just 1 hour of this. And I haven't even mentioned Florida State yet. Outside of, we did hear from Mike Norvell, right? But I haven't even gotten into that for the most part. I don't know if I will. I'll see which way we're going with it. Part of me that kind of believes they don't deserve any talk at this point. Maybe I'll get to them tomorrow. Maybe I'll get to them Wednesday. Maybe I won't. Right now, we're instead trying to figure out what's going on with the Jaguars. I do want to mention the passing of Lee Elder at 87, the Jackie Robinson of the sport of golf, particularly on the PGA Tour. First black golfer to ever play in the Masters. He did so in 1975. I never personally met Lee, but I read a lot about him earlier today. 87 years of age. He had been dealing with poor health. You know, they trying, you know, during some of the social justice protests that took place this year, the Masters made a change, and they brought Lee Elder to, you know, it used to be Arnie, Jack, and Gary, and Arnie passed, and they joined. They asked Lee Elder to join Nicklaus and Player and take the ceremonial opening tee shot, but because of poor health, he was unable to swing the club. But there you go. Lee Elder, he had passed today, passed on today at the age of 80. Seven. All right, the 2309 says, Ballou, what does it say about the staff and their evaluation abilities that Urban generally thinks Carlos Hyde is as good as J-Rob? The way they treat J-Rob is inexcusable. The other four teams averaging 5 yards per carry are all in the top six rushing attempts. The Jaguars in the bottom five in rushing attempts. He goes on to say he's not a fan of Bebel and these coaches, using some language that I cannot share with you. Yards per carry. Jacksonville is one of four teams in the NFL that averages 5 yards or better per carry. Indy 5-2, Philly 5-1, Cleveland 5-1, Jacksonville 5. All right. Look at the attempts of these other three teams. Colts, 335 attempts. Philly, 371. Cleveland, 346. Jacksonville, 255. So, you know, they're not running the football. The only teams who have run it less, L.A., that being the Chargers, 248. Tom Brady has always used, how about playoff Lenny yesterday with four touchdowns? Got 246 carries. For the Bucs, Jets, and Seattle, 243 and 231, respectively. So, yeah, it's absolutely alarming right now. Jacksonville, yards per carry, yards per game, is all good. They're just down in numbers when it comes to attempts. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you're down 17-0 3 weeks ago. You're down 17-0 last week. This week, you're down 21-3. Let's see here. 398 by Lawrence, 2 by Beathard. So this football team now, as we head towards the 12th game, they have thrown the football 400 times. They have run the football 255 times. I'm going to grab these calls, but I want to put this in perspective for you. Because I remember the 2017 season, because I'll always remember this number. In 2017, Blake Bortles and company threw the football 527 times. They ran the ball that year 527 times. Fournette had 268, Ivory had 112, Bortles 57, Yeldon 49, Grant 30. Tommy Bohannon had 5 carries. They did it 527 to 527, exactly 50% balance. Okay? Then they started losing games in droves. 2018 season. 536 passing attempts, 416 rushing attempts. 2019, 589 passing attempts, 389 rushing attempts. Last year, 616 passing attempts, 337 rushing attempts. Oh, by the way, James Robinson got it 240 times last year in 14 games. After that, as far as carries last year, Dari Ogunbowale had 32. Laviska Shenault had 17. Chris Thompson had 7. Divine Azigbo had 1. And Craig Reynolds had a carry. Did we ever find out who Craig Reynolds is? I've been covering this team since its infancy. I'm on the sideline for every game. For the life of me, I do not know who Craig Reynolds is.
Who are you? Yes, I see you. Hey, who is this guy? Did you even know he played on the team?
This year, 400 passing attempts, 255 rushing attempts. This football team is averaging 5 yards a carry. This football team is averaging 115.1 yards a game on the ground. Those are great. Those two numbers are perfect. What's lacking is attempts. And again, I understand that some of that you can't fix because you're trailing and you're forced to pass. Matt is up. He goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Welcome.
Hey, Ballew. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. Did I lose you?
Nope. Go ahead, buddy.
Okay, good. All right. I just wonder, like, in every business, it'll tell you, every business that's failing will tell you that a fish rots from the head down. And I just wonder, at the end of the day, we have more coaches. We have so many coaches that the State Department is jealous of how many people we have with titles. Is the communication bad? Is the game over Urban's head? Like, what? It's got to be something, and it's got to start with the leader of the team.
You know, if I knew the answer to that question, I would honestly tell you. I think communication or the lack thereof has absolutely been an issue. It seems like almost weekly we can point to something and say, well, what happened there? You know, listening to Urban, do we have the quote? Do we have the one on Urban saying that you got to ask Bevel? If we do, I want to run that just because I want to hear it again. I think he might have said it. Was that yesterday after the game or was that today? I mean, I get so involved in all of this stuff. Sometimes they run together for me. Yeah, let's try number two from today. This was Urban Meyer at his 1:45 press conference this afternoon. He was asked if James Robinson was benched after his fumble.
Rotation, and then he's still not 100%. You can see that on the perimeter runs, and we felt like Carlos had a little more juice in his legs, and so.
So it wasn't necessarily the fumble that kept him out?
It's a little bit, you know. I'm sure Bernie talked to him, and so did Bev and all those guys on the sideline. I did briefly, but the answer I got was rotation, and Carlos felt he should be in the game.
All right, that was today. Let's go to yesterday. This is right after the game. Urban Meyer, a similar question. Let's go to 8 first and then 12. 8 is Urban Meyer with a conversation with James Robinson, and then we'll get to J-Rob and why he wasn't in on the drive after the fumble. Let's do number 8 first.
I just, you know, James is a grown man, and I just lucky, you know, just talked to him about locking the elbow and clamping that's our terminology that we use to lock the ball down. And then he came back and ran, you know, had some decent runs in the second half. He still doesn't look like he's full speed to me. But, yeah, that was just the conversation with him.
And I agree with that. He doesn't look 100%. He doesn't have the normal burst that he has, and he's not considered a fast guy. Let's try 12 here. This is our final one. This is from yesterday. And, again, Urban Meyer asked about James Robinson after the fumble.
I think, you know, you'd have to ask Bev and Bernie on that one. You know, I don't micromanage that. But, you know, Carlos is a good player too, so they might have had him in there for that reason.
All right, so that's a little mystifying to me right there. Play that one more time. Let's all digest that. All right, this is the man who's got complete control of this organization. Micromanage. When I think Urban Meyer, that's one of the first things that comes to mind to me is a guy who knows each and everything that is going on with his football team. James Robinson is his best player. He is his best offensive player. And he wasn't on the field for 16 snaps after the fumble. He was asked why.
I think, you know, you'd have to ask Bev and Bernie on that one. You know, I don't micromanage that, but, you know, Carlos is a good player too, so they might have had him in there for that reason.
Yeah, but he's not half the player of James Robinson. And he had a huge drop yesterday. So didn't Dari Ogunbowale have a big drop yesterday? Yes, communication's been an issue. They haven't been able to get guys on the field. They haven't been able to get guys off the field. You had a punter that ran on late last week. I mean, there's been a lot of issues. There have been times where they have not looked like a properly coached team. Certainly at Seattle. Week one against Houston. And, you know, I know that these blue blood teams, they always seem to be among league leaders in penalties, but a lot of those are aggressive penalties, you know, late hits, running some guy out after the echo of the whistle, maybe jumping off sides on a key third down because you're trying to anticipate a snap. You kind of follow my drift there. I mean, Florida State, Florida, Miami, the big three in this state, go back to all those championship years and look at them. They were always among league leaders. Hell, they were among national leaders in penalties. But they were good enough teams that, for the most part, they can get away with it. This guy is, I've never met a man who is more attention to detail in everything that he did to build this football team. That is what he told us the entire month of August. And really ever since he got here, through free agency and the draft. And it's just not working that way. The results aren't there. And it's a major concern. I mean, my guess right now, going to be a major overhaul in six Sundays. I really believe that. I think right now you can look at two to three coordinators and say they're probably fighting for their jobs right now. Special teams-wise and offensive coordinator-wise. And I say it all the time. I hate it. I like all these guys to maintain. I do want consistency. I want people to be familiar with what it is that they're running. But you look around the league and you see what very good coaching can do for you on Saturday or Sunday. And then you see what not great coaching does to you. For those of you who still compare and say that Mac Jones should have been selected here compared to Trevor Lawrence, you need to consider two things. Number one, look where New England drafted, middle of the pack. They were a decent team last year, even the year after they lost Tom Brady. They weren't a one-win team. Number two, look at what they're doing to build this football team offensively around the rookie. Look how convenient it is for him to make plays. If you watched the game last week, or even 2 weeks ago, it was a nationally televised game, you saw how wide receivers, tight ends, whatever, running wide open all over the place. New England is the smartest team in the NFL year in, year out. A very high IQ football team. That's what you got to strive for, to be a smart team. You know, you look at the mistakes Jacksonville made yesterday. That doesn't define being a smart team. Two special team penalties is anything but high IQ football. And it just seems like it's one thing after another. All right, I'm way past the post. Let me get to that right now. When we come back, we'll grab some more phone calls from you. You can also get me on the text line, 641-1010.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, your call's coming up in 1 minute. Getting some great texts as well. On the text line, both numbers apply here, 641-1010. Ballew, isn't it fair to ask whether or not the Jags franchise can ever be relevant in Jacksonville? We cannot get any free agents worth a damn, and we just have no ability to draft contributors. I thought Urban could change all this, but honestly, he seems to have zero clue and less of an interest in trying. I think he's trying. I think he is absolutely frustrated. I disagree with your comments on free agents. I think it's a small number of players who are going to say, I don't want to go to Jacksonville because they can't win there. I think they're going to look at how much money you're paying them, and then you have no state tax and the quality of life. I think you can get big-time free agents, and we'll find out because the Jaguars are going to have more money than any team in the NFL this offseason. So I'm going to disagree with that. The draft is a totally different phase in all this. Recent drafts have been very poor. There's really no other way to say it. You win in this league by drafting players and re-signing those drafted players and then filling in gaps with free agency. And they've missed on way too many first-round picks. They just have. I mean, look at 2 years ago, for crying out loud. Look at a C.J. Henderson. You know, listen, I love Ke'Lavon Chase. I don't know if there's a guy in this team that I'd like to see make it more than him. He's not a great pass rushing end. He's a decent outside linebacker against the run. He got more burn yesterday than he has in the last couple of weeks. Let me see how many defensive snaps. Ke'Lavon had 27 yesterday. That's up. I think he had 13 a couple weeks ago. But all of a sudden, that draft is absolutely, you know, under the microscope. And, you know, you can't have picks like Fournette and like Jokel, Taven Bryan. You can't make those mistakes in the first round. And then you can't, you know, have a complete catastrophe like Jalen. The guy's a Hall of Famer. Yesterday he couldn't get Aaron Rodgers, and Rodgers had the beat on him, but we'll see. L.A.'s struggling. Well, it's going to be Jalen week, you know, three straight losses there. And this organization is going to be graded on that Jalen trade forever. I mean, when I grew up in Boston, you mentioned the name Jeff Bagwell, and they're going to say the Red Sox traded Jeff Bagwell to the Houston Astros for Larry Anderson in 26 in a third innings. And in the same token, the Red Sox are going to say they gave up Heathcliff Slocum, and they got Jason Varitek and... How come I can't think of the pitcher? Did I turn 50? Is that it? Is that the reason why?
No. You're encyclopedia with this stuff.
Was that it?
No.
Who was the other part of that deal with Varitek? I can't even think of it right now. How about Braves fans? He gave up Doyle Alexander. He went 9-0 that year for Detroit. He brought in return Steve Avery. Okay, you're always going to remember those trades. So we're going to be a couple years down. You can't grade it now because we haven't seen Travis Etienne play. But it's going to be Chase on, Etienne, and Jordan Smith. That is what it is going to be when it's all said and done. Mike is next up. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. What's going on?
Hey, man. I just wanted to call in as a 49ers fan and bring to light one part of the conversation that hasn't been addressed, which is the general manager, i.e. Trent Baalke. Based on my experience with him and watching him as a lifelong 49ers fan, yet also as someone who went to the first Jaguars fan game in 1996 in the preseason with his grandfather. So I do have a heart for the Jaguars. So I want that to be clear. You know, a lot of things you were touching upon were are the ability to draft and get the right players on the field. And a lot of the conversation has been about the coaches and some of these players. Well, ultimately, the general manager is the one who is responsible for this. And, you know, there's a reason why there wasn't we called it the all ACL team.
Yeah.
Trent Baalke was a horrible drafter. You know, he inherited a team that included Patrick Willis, Justin Smith, Frank Gore, Vernon Davis, Michael Crabtree, Deshaun Goldson. We all are familiar with those players.
Yeah, and he traded a lot, and he drafted a lot of injured players. He also had his fingerprints on that Super Bowl team. And, you know, I did a deep dive on that a few weeks ago when San Francisco rolled into town. You had, you know, four guys that he drafted still on the San Francisco 49ers roster. Trent Baalke's under the microscope here. The only thing I don't have an answer for you on is this. You said everything ends up falling on him as far as his responsibility. I don't know that. It's been very confusing around here the past half decade. We don't know who was calling the shots between Coughlin and Caldwell. Hell, I thought forever it was Coughlin who Jalen Ramsey was pissed at. We didn't find out until early this year when Jalen did a podcast that it was David Caldwell who, you know, that was the final straw. I've heard forever that it was a Coughlin pick to get Leonard Fournette. That, you know, Tom thought he could win with some play-action passing, a big, tough running game like Parcells had with Otis Anderson and Parcells had with Joe Morris and great defense. I don't know. I don't know who drafted last year. There have been times where Urban Meyer has looked at us and said, I'm learning. This is all new for me. I just can't believe that Urban Meyer would roll in here and say, we're going to draft this player, draft that player, draft this player. But in the same sentence, Trevor Lawrence was a foregone conclusion. But let's go to the second first-round pick. I don't know. But my guess is that Travis Etienne was an Urban Meyer selection. That's my guess. Now, I've talked to many people about this, but regardless of what Jason LaCanfora may try to sell you, the doors aren't open and people are just yelling down the halls, hey, you know, it was Urban who wants to do it. It's hard to find out this information. And usually a lot of stuff does begin to leak when you're part of a losing organization. And that's certainly been the part around here in recent history. But it doesn't mean we know who made these picks. I got to believe Trent Baalke and his scouting staff had an awful lot to do with these picks. Trent Baalke has a reputation of drafting players who have been injured. It's not his fault that Etienne got injured. Now, is it his fault that he went out and got Walker Little, who had played one game in 2 years? Is it his fault that he went out and got Andre Sisco after tearing an ACL? Again, I don't know what went on in the room. I don't know how those conversations took place. I don't know if Urban stands up and says, I have final say here. This is what we're going to do. I don't know the answer to those questions. We had a first-year NFL coach a year ago who came from the college game, and Matt Rhule, and after the season, the general manager was replaced. I remember speculating about that when this happened, and they said, okay, Trent Baalke's going to stay on as the GM. If it wasn't a great year, would Trent Baalke become the fall guy simply because someone has to go? Well, what if you are Shad Khan and Tony Khan, and you damn well know who made those picks? What if Urban made all these picks? What if Trent Baalke, and if it sounds like I'm defending Trent Baalke, I'm not. It's not like Trent Baalke and I are buds or Urban Meyer and I are buds. I'm just trying to look at this from both sides. We used to live in a world where the general manager made the picks and the coach coached. And then Bill Parcells, if I'm going to be the cook, if I'm going to be the chef, let me shop for the groceries. And we got into all that nonsense. Coughlin got into it as well. It's too much. You can't be a coach and a GM. It has worked. Certainly certainly Belichick has proven it wrong. But he's had a lot of guys in the front office that he has worked with time and again. I don't know the answer. That's what I'm trying to tell you right now. And it's not for a lack of effort. Things, they've done a nice job. They even let some people go from the scouting staff, a few of which I was, I don't know how to say it. I've had conversations with and know. And, there just hasn't been a lot of leakage. There hasn't. I don't know the answer to these questions. I don't know if anyone that you listen to truly knows the answer to that question right now. Now, if someone gets sent walking papers, will we find that out down the road? Look how long it really took to find out about the Jalen thing. How many people were wrong when they said it was Coughlin? It was Coughlin. Coughlin did it. We didn't find out until what month it was. I don't know. Was it April, May? That it was Caldwell. You don't know until you hear directly from someone who was involved. So I feel like I muddied the waters even more. I don't know what to tell you. I think everyone, though, is under the microscope. You've got to draft well. You absolutely have to. And right now, this class, leaving a little bit to be desired. I'm happy that Tyson Campbell had a better game. By the way, Heathcliff Slocum traded for Jason Varitek and Derek Lowe.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, let's grab a few more of these calls, and then I want to wrap it up with a couple of thoughts on college football, having had an opportunity to get there. Let's get to Charlie, who's next up. How you doing, Charlie?
Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to mention, I know you guys will get enough Trevor calls, so I'm sorry to hit you with another one, but the one thing, Trevor's the most important thing to me this year, and probably to a lot of people for our organization. The one thing that's scared me the most is when he does have somebody open, I know it's rare, he hasn't been accurate. And watching football throughout my entire life, it's just rare for me to see a quarterback come out, have accuracy issues, and actually fix that later in their career. And I was wondering if you've ever seen a quarterback come out and have accuracy issues and actually get better. There's some things they can develop and get better at, but accuracy I've never seen. Have you ever seen a quarterback come out and have accuracy issues and later on get better at that?
At Tom Brady for long. Look at the first couple of Super Bowls. I mean, Brady didn't even throw a touchdown pass, I believe, in the first Super Bowl. It's a very good point, and it's one that I'm going to talk with Denny Thompson when he joins me on Wednesday. I would rather have accuracy issues than I would a hitch in my throw or problems mechanically with my feet. To answer your question, yes, I do believe you can become more accurate of a quarterback. If you look at Gardner Minshew, and I shouldn't even compare the two because one was a first-round pick, the other was a sixth. You know, when you look at Minshew, he didn't have the arm strength. He did not set his feet. He left the pocket way too soon. He did not see well nor step up in the pocket. I mean, the list just went on and on and on. Now, you get to Trevor Lawrence, and absolutely, he's completing 58% of his passes. And wide receivers and his weapons have not been getting open. There are other times where he has missed guys. My guess is that you can improve on your accuracy. I think a lot of that will come with confidence. I think a lot of that will come with being able to trust that your receivers are going to be open. But I don't know that as fact. So I'm going to ask, when Wednesday night at 6:15 is when Denny Thompson, our quarterback whisperer, is on. I'm going to dive real deep into that subject. It's a very good question. And again, my answer to that is I believe you can improve your accuracy, but I don't know that. And I'm going to ask, I can think of some. Jordan Travis is a much better, much more accurate passer than he was a year ago. You know, you've seen that with college kids. You've seen it with pro kids. It's a good question, though. Thank you for that. 8009, Blue, this diehard Notre Dame fan loves the Lincoln Riley hire. NDB USC is a top five rivalry in the country, and USC hasn't held up their end the past few years. Even if Notre Dame gets beat a couple of times, it will push Notre Dame program to be better and hopefully get us over the hump. What do you think? You know, my girlfriend's an OU grad, and first off, I'll raise my hand. I was totally, absolutely, positively shocked by this hire. Shocked. The guy was 55-10 in Norman. And, you know, is he scared to go to the SEC? I'm not even going to dive deep into an opinion on that. Here's what I do know. He can now control the West. He can absolutely dominate the West Coast. Who is going to compete with Lincoln Riley and the University of Southern California? No one. It's not even close. So, Norman is one of the few college towns I've never been to. I imagine it's fun and it's nice. And, you know, they got plenty of tradition there with Bud Wilkinson and with Barry Switzer and Bob Stoops. And now Lincoln Riley, the head appointed guy, the handpicked guy from Bob Stoops. It's all. But USC, I mean, I was lucky enough to go to seven straight USC-UCLA games when I worked in Chicago because the station we were on in L.A. was the home of the Trojans. So I went to the Coliseum and the Rose Bowl combined seven times. And I want to tell you something. When USC is on, it's pretty special. Being there for the Matt Leinart years and the Reggie Bush years, and it was, you know, Pete Carroll. It was on. I remember when they had Pete Carroll, Norm Chow, Lane Kiffin, and Steve Sarkisian. Pete Carroll, the defensive mind, but those three, you know, running your offense. So that's why you do it. If he had left and gone to LSU, I never would have seen it. But I think just think about it. He can control half the country. All of the national title contenders are right here in the Deep South. Set aside, let's say, Ohio State in Michigan, Notre Dame. What else do you have? I mean, seriously. It's all SEC in Deep South. Okay, Clemson. I still believe Florida State's going to return one of these days. They are years from it. But the world's not flat. They're going to come back at some point. I do want to credit Florida for getting this done the right way with Billy Napier. I mean, they wasted no time. They identified who they wanted, and they went out and they got him. So congratulations. Because I sat in this same seat 2 years ago when Mike Norvell once again held Florida State hostage. Jimbo Fisher did it yearly. And Florida State, you know, hung around, and everyone's like, when are they going to make a hire? When are they going to make a hire? Well, secretly, we're going to allow Mike Norvell to have that rematch between Memphis and Cincinnati? And you're not a big enough program that you can't let it out the way that Florida did yesterday? It cost them a recruiting class. You had people telling recruits, oh, Bob Stoops is going. Oh, Mark Stoops is going. Oh, James Franklin is going. I remember Hickin getting on TV. He mentioned like eight candidates. Crying out loud, he mentioned Amos Alonzo Stagg as a candidate. I'll never forget watching Hickin one night. He's like, yeah, well, they settled on Mike Norvell, but he was like their eighth candidate. The media was spitting out stuff like that. Because Florida State was so freaking ignorant that they waited. Florida said, screw that. Where are you at, Louisiana? You got a rematch coming up against Appalachian State for the Sun Belt? Well, here's what's going to go on. If you want to be the coach, here's the contract. Sign it. We're announcing it. Okay, you want to coach? You can coach. But we're announcing it. Not Florida State. They're like, oh my God, can cancel our plans. It's the American Conference Championship game this weekend. I mean, it's a rematch between Memphis and Cincinnati. Just, honey, take the kids. Just leave me alone. I mean, who doesn't want to watch a rematch between Memphis and Cincinnati? But we're trying to save a recruiting class here. This Willie Taggart hire was a disaster. It comes on the heels of Odell Hagans wanting the job. He wanted it 2 years ago when Jimbo left. Odell's got his own little faction of guys who want it. You got all these Bob Stoops rumors. Can we please? Mike Norvell, I can't do it to my kids at Memphis. No, 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 no. Don't announce it until December 8th. Don't announce it until after the game. Florida State goes, okay, okay. Florida goes, screw that. Louisiana, what, Sun Belt? Here's the deal. You want to coach here? Yeah, I want to coach here. Sign the contract.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Monday Night Football coming up in a little bit. Seattle in the District of Columbia. Basically a pick'em game. A bit of money on Seattle, maybe minus one and a hook. The 54-44 says, Ballew, did I just hear you pick Florida to win against Florida State? My answer is yes, I did pick Florida. I'm not sure why you would be surprised. I always pick who I think is going to win. I thought Florida was going to win. Marvelous job of sandbagging all week by fans and the media that you're going to get crushed. And I remember going on a prime time, I do a weekly Hackers. Oh, I'm just going to come right out and say it right now. You guys are going to crush us. And I mean, ultimate sandbagging, but on the flip side, there was the overconfidence coming in with Florida State. A lot of these jobbers, and that's what you really turned into. Oh, you guys are going to win. Florida is the kill. You guys are going to show up. Whatever. I wish I was as accurate with all my picks as that one. It was a missed opportunity for FSU. They could have developed a tremendous amount of momentum. You know, you knock off Miami, you knock off Florida, you get three more weeks of practices, you get 15 more opportunities, you get a bowl game, you get a chance to finish with a winning record after starting 0-4, and they let it all get away by way too many mistakes and really bad in-game coaching. So we'll see if they can respond. I've heard it, though, from all the Florida State fans. I mean, seriously, there are Florida State fans out there right now who believe that they got a moral victory to begin the year against Notre Dame, and they wrapped it up with a moral victory against the University of Florida. I'm still one of those who looks at the end result. That's winning and losing. And Florida State lost. Am I pissed off? Absolutely. Now, it goes away a lot quicker because it's not what it once meant. But, I mean, teams were running for 253. They were just carving up Florida. And Florida said, you're not going to run on us today. So Florida manned up. They were the more physical team. And they won the football game. Also, that whole accuracy question that I got a couple of minutes ago was a good one. I've had a lot of people come in here and tell me about Josh Allen, the Bills quarterback, as one. Again, I'm going to do that with Denny Thompson Wednesday night at 6:15. That'll be one of the first questions that I do get out there. I got to say this, folks. I do apologize. I usually try to get to about everyone on our text line. I received hundreds tonight. And I, as always, appreciate you getting in with your opinion and whatever it is that you want to get off your chest. But I'm not going to be able to respond to you all. I also do not check the text line now that the show is over. Okay? If you want to get a hold of me at any other time, the best way to do so is on Twitter. Just go to Ballou1010XL. That is BALLOU1010XL. I'm traveling Friday to Los Angeles, so I'll have a short week with you. Tomorrow night after Helmets and Heels, Wednesday and Thursday night, 6 to 8, Thursday at Mr. Chubby's in Pontevedra. RJ Saunders will be there. We're going back to your hometown looking for a W.
Yes, sir.
Folks, enjoy Monday Night Football. Have a great evening, and we will talk Tuesday right here on your home of the Jacksonville Jaguars. My name is Rick Ballou. Good night.